going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Can you believe it? There are only 7 days left before Election Day. This election is one of the most highly anticipated in recent memory. And while there is so much discussion around who the next president will be, voters need to be mindful of so much more. Tonight, we're going to address some of those things for those who are still trying to figure it all out. My guests are Siobhan Arlene Bradley, president of Delta for Women in Action, a national social welfare and advocacy organization, and Lewis Davis Jr., D.C. State Director for AARP. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question as it relates to your ballot, if you haven't voted already, at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Siobhan, Lewis, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Siobhan, can you hear me? Siobhan, can you hear me okay? Well, we will get to Siobhan in just a bit. Let me go first to Lewis. Lewis, you know, AARP focusing, as always, on a constituency that is over the age of 50 years old. And this year could not be more important. Talk to me a little bit about what the organization is focusing on. What's the big message for the 50-plus set?
I will be happy to do that. And first, Harold, let me thank you for having me on this evening. And, AARP is happy to be here. AARP is a nonprofit, and this is important, nonpartisan member organization. And we've been working to promote the health and well-being of Americans 50 and older for more than 60 years. And this time around, AARP is working hard to provide reliable information and resources for this 2020 election cycle. And you couldn't be more right in helping people to understand, particularly your listeners here in the district, that while everyone knows that this is a presidential election, there are quite a few other things on the ballot that they're voting for. And AARP hopes that people will take advantage of this, the freedoms we have, because what we've learned is that freedom is not always free, and that there are people who sometimes make it a bit more difficult than it needs to be. But happily, in the District of Columbia, it couldn't be more easy to vote, and we'll get into that later, I hope.
Yes, but we will.
We hope ahead. That people will vote for their health, their financial security and safety, but not only those that are 50 and older, but for they and their families. And we want people to stay safe and healthy while they make their voices heard this election cycle.
What does that mean? You were saying you want people to vote for their health, their safety, and financial security. When you get down a little bit into the weeds of that, mm-hmm. what are you talking about for the 50 and older set?
Sure. So here in a district, there are a wide assortment of seats up for re-election. So everybody knows there's the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
But our delegate, the United House of Representatives, is up for re-election. That seat's currently held by Democrat Eleanor Holmes Norton. We have two at-large seats on the D.C. Council that are up for re-election, one being vacated by Independent David Grosso. There are 22 candidates running for that seat, plus incumbent at-large Robert White, who's a Democrat. So there's two at-large members of the council that people have a chance to vote for. There are council members in wards 2, 4, 7, and 8 that are up for re-election. There's our shadow United States Senator. There's our shadow United States Representative. There's an at-large member of the State Board of Education. And every ANC commissioner is up for re-election, plus State Board of Education seats in wards 2, 4, 7, and 8. So on the ballot are all of them. And on everyone's ballot, you have a chance to vote for each of those and make your voices heard.
I just listening to that list makes me tired.
You should see the ballot. It is quite large.
Absolutely. Yeah, and if you're driving around D.C. and you check out the median strips, one, for example, right there at South Dakota Avenue as you're coming off of Route 50, coming into D.C., right there by Costco, I mean, I tell you, the median strip is just chock full.
Size, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And this brings me to, Siobhan, when you have, for example, all of these candidates who are running, 22 candidates, when you're talking about D.C. Council and State Board of Election, you have D.C. delegate, then you have the shadow senators, it is head spinning. How do you separate the wheat from the chaff, to use a faith-based comment or statement? Siobhan, can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. Yes, I can.
Okay, so go right ahead. How do you separate, the candidates who are interested in, the kinds of issues that you want to see move forward?
Absolutely. So I'm really excited to talk to you a little bit about the work of Delta Foreman in Action. And as we're thinking about candidates, our intention is to really identify those issues, particularly that black communities are interested in. We are a constituency that votes heavily on social experiences of our community. So we're talking about health care. We're talking about economics, jobs, access. We're talking about education. And quiet as it's kept, people don't really understand. Our community is very interested in access to capital. And so closing this wealth gap is a major part of the work that's being done. And as you're thinking about candidates, organizations like ours, we separate them. This is not solely about political party for us. Our work is to identify where candidates focus their policy as well as how candidates have voted in the past. If they are an incumbent, if they are someone who has a record of voting, we assess and we partner with organizations like the NAACP to identify what have they voted on, what have they supported, and have those voting measures been aligned with those policies that really advance black communities in this country. So that's really how we separate our candidates and our assessment of those candidates.
How do you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is something called a voting record that we use. Voting records, we align them based on certain policies that we find not only in polling but also in engaging in black communities across the country in rural, suburban, and in urban areas. So what we do is we finalize that voting record. We look at those nonpartisan views of policies. We partner with organizations that engage, like the economic studies teams. We talk to economists. And we're able to say, listen, we want to hear perspectives from all sides to be able to make a clear decision on those candidates that we believe have pushed policies that have advanced our communities.
That's interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Beyond voting for president, you still have a week. If you haven't made up your mind about some of the what they call down ballot issues or individuals, now is the time for you to really focus on what is best for you. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So here's a thing, Lewis, that I find, particularly fascinating. How, from your perspective, and as you said, definitely nonpartisan, but how do you cut through all of the noise of Trump-Biden? If I am someone who is still trying to figure out what else I need to address on the ballot, how do I do that?
Sure, I'm happy to. So a number of things we've done over the last couple of months, we've been trying to engage District of Columbia voters of every age, but especially our members, in online telecom hall meetings we've been doing. We've done a variety of events. online with the D.C. Board of Elections, help people to know first how to vote. Can't make your voice heard if you don't know how to make your voice heard. And we've also suggested that people might ask five questions of candidates. If you're like me, your mailbox is full, particularly in the last 2 weeks. It seems to come heavy in the last 2 weeks, like they finally realize where you know who you are and where you live, and they start to get their mail out to you. So if you're getting loads of these leaflets and flyers and pluggers from candidates, you can visit their websites as well. But read that material they send you. They're putting on there what they think is the best that they have to offer, because they only have a very limited amount of space. But go to their website where they have a lot more space to say where they stand on different issues. We've taken ads out in the Afro and the Washington Informer, I believe the City Paper or Digital, and we've encouraged people to see where all these candidates for these at-large seats, the council member seats here in D.C., where they stand on budget and tax priorities that will improve the lives of district residents 50 and older. What are they going to do to promote affordable housing and access to community services? What are their views on a mandated consumer advocate on a utility commission? And, you know, somebody who will be on the utility commission is looking out for the consumer. See where they stand in support of creation of an elder abuse response team. This is something that several council members have called for to help protect seniors from all forms of abuse, physical and financial. And what will they do to ensure that district residents are protected against fraud and deceptive or unfair business practices? I mean, those are just five questions that our members tell us they care a lot about. Go to their websites and see where they stand on not only these issues, but other issues. That's what those websites are for. They let them know you've gone to their website. Go there, and they're looking for opinions and feedback. And if you don't see that they're answering the way you want to answer, look to the next candidate.
You know, it's so interesting that you should mention that also, Lewis, when you talk about the elder abuse issue and the response to that. But also the fraud protection issue, mm-hmm. because, and I don't have to tell you, that we have seen those two issues really bubble up in the midst of, you know, the pandemic. Because even though, you know, everyone is trying to move through the pandemic, and we have so many people, for example, who are trying to reach out, help their neighbors, particularly, you know, their elderly neighbors, you know, there are some snakes out there. Mm-hmm. And we have to, you know, make sure that there are candidates who, if they are elected, are going to be focusing on getting rid of those snakes, not to mention, as we've seen with child abuse, as we've seen with domestic violence, and we've also seen with, you know, with elder abuse. And I think that is such a critical issue always, but certainly right now during the pandemic.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And we've paid attention to that. We pay attention to that all the time. You want to know where your candidates stand on these issues. And as your other guest said, look to see for a candidate who's an incumbent, where they've stood on these issues in the past.
Okay. Let me go to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Angela, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, Angela, go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi. I live in a ward where the council member has been longstanding. As a matter of fact, I live less than a mile from his house. And I'm just really, really disappointed that the city is not responsive as far as cleaning up our streets. They're filthy. And I don't live in a horrible neighborhood. Like I said, I live right down the street, right off of Branch Avenue. And our two main streets are thoroughfares, coming from Maryland to D.C. and then again in the afternoon coming from D.C. going back to Maryland. And they just throw trash out the windows and they keep going. I fuss about the trash, and they say, well, I have to petition my whole neighborhood to get street cleaning.
Hmm. Siobhan, let me ask you about this, because this isn't just a D.C. question. This is a Baltimore question. This is a Miami question. It's a Dallas. It's a Chicago question. How can an ordinary taxpaying citizen like Angela make sure that her voice is heard, short of petitioning the whole neighborhood for something that should be expected expected to be taken care of by city services? Siobhan, can you hear me?
Can you all hear me now?
I can. Go right ahead. Did you hear my question?
Absolutely. Heard your question. I wanted to answer for calling, and we're going to call her a taxpaying voting citizen because the first part of the question really speaks to the needs of our local community members to understand that not only their vote, but their ability to identify local councils, local commissions that have appointments and seats. You should be not only using the media to be involved, but you should also try to sit on some of these commissions. What we find is that a lot of our citizens in cities across this country don't realize they have the opportunity not only to serve, but also to have their voice heard, and they need to go on record. So this is more than just petitioning. This is actually taking visits to council meetings. This is actually putting your name on the record. This is actually utilizing local organizations that already have a standing presence. And the other piece is identifying champions. One of the things I really want your listeners to understand is that there is nothing like having coordinated what we call direct action in this work. And coordinated direct action allows you to be able to highlight those issues and then tell the candidates that are running that if you don't do X, you'll not only lose votes, but you'll also lose the political muscle that you have in this locality. And I think at the end of the day, one of the things that we find with a lot of our citizens is that they do kind of feel helpless. They feel like they get the runaround from one conversation and they quit. And this is exactly the opposite thing that we should do. We should identify partners. You should then be engaging not other residents, and then also utilizing the power of your voice and vote to be able to push things forward. This is more than just phone calls. It's phone calls and on-record emails and then utilizing the media to tell your story.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I did want to ask both of you, because I know that you have some resources, and we're going to take a break in just a few seconds. But before we do, for our listeners who want to get some information about both of your organizations, where can they find that information online?
Absolutely. So Delta for Women in Action is a newly created organization. We were created by Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. They can go to Delta, D-E-L-T-A, the number 4, womeninaction.org. We are an advocacy organization that is a 501c4 that can take a stance on specific down-ballot issues, and you can be a supporter. We don't have a membership organization. This is a supporter organization. So if you support certain candidates, certain issues, this organization is for anyone. Deltaforwomeninaction.org.
Yes, because I understand that the membership process is a little more involved. But right now.
That's a little different.
Yeah, just a little bit different. I do understand. My mother would tell you so. Lewis, information about AARP before we go to the break, real quick.
Absolutely, and while we are a member organization, the vast majority of the resources we have online is available to anybody. Our members just get a little bit more extra from us.
So what's the website? Because I got to go to a break real quick.
www.aarp.org.
AARP.org. Thank you so much. Sit tight. We're going to take a quick break. We're also going to talk to Grady in D.C. in just a few seconds. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a bit. 202-319-7810. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about voting. But it's much more complex than that. Not just who's going to be president. That's not the issue tonight. Tonight, we're going to focus on the down-ballot issues. The candidates, the issues that impact your immediate community. My guests are Siobhan Arlene Bradley. She is president of Delta for Women in Action, which is a national social welfare and advocacy organization. Also, Lewis Davis Jr., D.C. State Director for AARP. Both of these organizations are nonpartisan. If you have questions, if you haven't made up your mind yet, if you haven't done the early voting, if you are still waiting to kind of figure out where you're going to go when it comes to local issues and candidates, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to go back to the phone lines. Grady, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
How you doing? Grady.
Yes, sir.
I'm from Chicagoland. I'm from D.C. Here's my question. I heard one of your guests mention things about health care, education, mm-hmm. health. And my thing is this. For the last at least 50 years, Black Americans have been ascribing ourselves to a particular set of policies, especially in our inner city, and they have not worked for us. Why do we keep ascribing ourselves those policies, and why haven't we looked deeper to figure out why they haven't worked for us?
When you say, let me look a little deeper into your question, Grady, if you don't mind. When you say look deeper, are you talking about asking more penetrating questions of the candidates? What do you mean specifically?
Ask the question one more time, sorry.
I said, in other words, are you talking about if what hasn't worked in the past? That's what you're suggesting, particularly.
What I'm saying is, progressive left-wing policies in our inner cities in particular, these are what we've ascribed to. And the results have been closing schools, failing education systems, wealth gap has not closed. Why do we look at why these policies haven't worked?
So let me start with you, Lewis, because I think, to better characterize that, this has to do with really examining not only the policies, for example, that Grady is talking about, but who may be elected. And I know we only have a week, but perhaps it is still not too late to ask, some of the candidates who are running locally very, very specific questions.
I want to touch on something that Siobhan said earlier about being engaged and being involved. And I would add your ANC commissioners. As I mentioned, every ANC commissioner is up for re-election here in the District of Columbia. Politics, as Tip O'Neill said, is local. Politics is local. And the more we can convince people to not only vote, but then after casting their vote, to stay engaged, the better off these our communities will be. The ANC meetings is where a lot of local, very local, hyper-local decisions are made. And if you're not in the room, you're not part of that decision. In the term public policy, is the first word in that is public. Public policy is supposed to involve the public. Too often, too many of us watch from the bleachers while a few select folk down on the field play the game of politics. And then if we don't like the way things happen inside that game, we say we don't like the game of politics, but we're sitting in the bleachers. We have to be involved. We can, as Siobhan said, run for office against any of those persons on the field. Winning public policy is about winning ideas. And there is and never has been any single silver bullet solution to any of the problems that has ailed man since we've been on the planet. And it won't be tomorrow. So it's about competition of ideas. And so to get your ideas into the room, it starts with voting, but it doesn't end with voting. As Siobhan said, it's getting onto the Board of Elections. It's getting onto our local commission, the ANC commissioners here in the District of Columbia and the like, and keeping those you vote for accountable, reminding them that you voted for them. And guess what? Even if you didn't vote for them and you live in his or her ward, they're still accountable to you. But guess what? That's only if you make them accountable to you. And you do that by standing in their face in a nice way, in their face, in their ear, about the issues that matter to you. But there's never been a single solution to any problem that ails us, and there won't be. It's a competition of ideas. And sometimes the idea that wins out may not be the way you would have wanted it to go. And that's this majority, this republic that we have, called a democracy with a small d, that we still have yet to perfect.
And can I
yeah, please,
well?
Go right ahead. Absolutely.
Yeah, I actually want to appreciate the question because I think what gets lost in a lot of translation is really understanding this process. So calling to the carpet the actual policy process is as American as apple pie, right? Mm-hmm. The ideas that come forth, though, have to come from evidence-based research, have to come from tested experiences and programs, and part of that is around how resources have been allocated in order to see those programs or policies move forward. When you think about Social Security, when you think about Medicare being enacted, all those policies got the same kind of, you know, argument and pushback. The Affordable Care Act, I'm a public health person in my day job, and so this kind of context has been a big part of the narrative for hundreds of years in this country. And the real push for black communities, though, is to not just subscribe, but to research and understand the implications of these policies, particularly education. I heard him talk about failing schools. All of those are absolutely right. So the real question is, where do you stand on these issues? And then what champions do we have in the House, in the Senate, in your local state assembly, that really brought the call in from Illinois, that are able to push these, invest in them, and see if they work, and if they don't, take them off the ballot. And I think that that's where the power of the people need to come in. We have got to, and this is why Delta for Women in Action was created. You called us nonpartisan. We are an advocacy organization that can actually address partisan issues if that is the choice of the board. And that gives us that leeway to, hey, call it out. If there's an issue with any side of an aisle, independent, Republican, or Democrat, it's around understanding how those policies have played out for our communities and then make some adjustments with the research and evidence to back us up.
Grady, thank you so much for your well-informed question. I appreciate it. I hope that if you haven't voted yet, that you get on it. So thank you again. I appreciate your question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the vote, not just what's happening at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but some of those down ballot issues. I do want to talk a little bit more, Lewis, from your perspective, and this isn't so much about what's on the ballot, but about some of the other things, for example, in the District of Columbia. Early voting started in D.C. It started today. And, you know, one of the biggest constituencies historically in D.C. is the senior citizen constituency. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember when Marion Barry was mayor, and he was the one who was who, you know, kind of came up with this idea of making sure that senior citizens had an opportunity to get to the polls. But now we're in, you know, a pandemic, and as much as the D.C. Board of Election and the Bowser administration is trying to make this convenient, this is not your grandparents' voting season. Everything is different because we're in the midst of the pandemic. Talk to me about that. Lewis, did you hear my question?
Sorry, I have myself on mute, so I didn't interrupt earlier. Yeah, this is an unprecedented time, for sure. But here, we're lucky to be in the District of Columbia. If we were a state, and hopefully one day we will be, we would be at the top of the pack with access to the vote. Early voting started today at 32 polling sites around the District of Columbia, open 8:30 to 7 p.m. every day until November 2nd. There's curbside voting. To every registered voter, 50 plus and younger, they had mailed to their home the voter guide and a ballot. People have the chance to mail in that ballot, and it's very important to follow instructions on the ballot if you're mailing it in. You can drop that ballot at any of these polling sites beginning this week, or it's actually as soon as you got the ballot mailed to your home. I got mine about 2 weeks ago. At any one of the 32 polling sites, you could drop the ballot. There are ballot boxes, D.C. Board of Elections, official ballot boxes, 55 of them all around the District of Columbia. You can drop, you can complete a ballot inside one of those drop boxes. You can also vote in person, as I mentioned. So that's three ways already to vote early. We've been calling this, instead of, you know, November 3rd being election day,
November 3rd is the last day to vote, not the first day to vote. It's the last day to vote. So, yeah, things are different. This is voting week, D.C. Board of Elections is calling. This is voting week, and it began today. I encourage your listeners to not wait until November 3rd. I know there's something kind of sexy and exciting about voting on Election Day, but if you do that, go in with your eyes wide open, knowing it may be long. It may be a long line. That's something we need to fix here in this country. You shouldn't have to wait for 4 or 5 hours to vote. But you should know that there's a lot of enthusiasm out there. But you don't have to wait until November 3rd. Not when you can mail in your ballot, and not when you can drop that ballot off at any drop box, any voting center in the district. And you can also vote in person in any district inside the District of Columbia, in any ward. So that's brand new. If you live in Ward 3 and you're grocery shopping in Ward 4 or vice versa, you can drop the ballot off and you run an errand. I mean, it doesn't get much easier than that. And it's curbside voting. If you're 65 and older, they're not going to be carding people. So you can be 60 and then just fine. or any person with a disability of any age, and they're not going to check for your disability either. But there's curbside voting at all of the regular voting centers. You pull into the curbside voting. It's not an express lane. So you don't get any special advanced treatment. But you don't have to get out of your car. You don't have to get out of your car. They'll come to you. The only exception is at the supercenters. At the supercenters, there is no curbside voting at the supercenters. And there's 6 supercenters, and they are like they sound. These are big venues that have turned themselves over to the D.C. Board of Elections, and because they can host hundreds and hundreds of people inside of them, keeping them 6 feet apart while they vote. But those voting centers won't have curbside voting, but they're open now as part of early voting, and they'll be open on November 3rd. If I can say a little bit more about that, the mail-in ballot, it's very important that people read the instructions on that mail-in ballot. If you make mistakes, your ballot might be spoiled, and you might not have a chance to fix it. So when you get that mail-in ballot, there's a long sheet that says mail ballot instructions. And, you know, we've gotten pretty spoiled. We think we're pretty good, and we skip the instructions, and we just start cooking. You want to read those instructions. If you fill that ballot out with a pencil, it's no good. You want to use an ink pen, blue or black ink. So read those instructions. Everything that's very important that they're afraid people will miss has been highlighted in red. You put that ballot in the box, and you haven't signed it and sealed it properly inside of the secrecy envelope that's inside, and then put that envelope inside the outer envelope, it will be spoiled, and then your vote will be lost. So please, if you do mail in your ballot or drop it off at a ballot box, make sure you first read the instructions.
And I think that is so critically important. And the big piece that you mentioned was a lot of people say, well, I know who I'm going to vote for, and I know what I'm going to. Okay. But, and as I said, even though we're, you know, talking about D.C., but – you know, if you live in Virginia or Maryland or anywhere else, I think it is great advice for you to don't rush.
Yeah.
Don't rush. I live in Maryland. I did the mail-in ballot. But besides the, you know, president, you know, that's one thing. But then as you kind of move down and, you know, you start looking at, you know, congressional representatives, bond issues.
Mm-hmm.
I say again, bond issues. That's critical. And, you know, and for example, here in Baltimore City where I live, this was so important. There was a misprint in the way that a particular bond issue was written. And with the mail-in vote, there was a correction. And it was a critical correction. And if you read the misprint, it may have caused you to vote for or against it one way or another. And after I read the correction, I said, oh, okay, I'm going to vote differently than I would have if I had just read the incorrect printing. And bond issues, Siobhan, are huge because that's money.
Yeah, absolutely. Bond issues, and I'm also in Maryland as well. Yeah. Thinking about gaming, that was on our ballot. I actually voted yesterday. And again, bond issues connecting to revenue, connecting to state allocations. And I think we have to understand that down ballot voting really is the crux of every person's everyday life. And that's what Delta for Women in Action is really trying to help people understand. We have to think about issues beyond federal. Let's just say it that way, because you're going to get your House of Representatives, you're going to deal with the senators, you're going to have a presidential election. But these down ballot issues, these referendums, constitution changes, right? These things that keep coming up, issues around bonds, issues around gaming. We also have judges, and if I could just scream at the top of my lungs the word judges every single day, right? Because we have seen court appointments right now, federal appointments across this country that have swayed the court in a certain direction. And now we're seeing opportunities for local voters to be able to vote for some of those circuit court judges. These are individuals that are going to make laws, that are going to create the kind of society that you want or don't want, depending on your vote. And so this down ballot experience is really going to help voters understand that these decisions that you make, we joke about this sometimes, my friends, but to your listeners, we don't care if it's a dog catcher. Vote for
right.
them too, right? Vote for every exchange in your everyday life in your community that you want to happen. Because if you don't, those decisions will be made for you, and then you're going to be stuck with the bag until you have another opportunity to vote.
I'm going to drill down a little bit more about that last piece that you mentioned, too, about the judicial branch of this country. And a lot of people who are looking at judges, district attorneys, depending on where you are, or for example, what they call them in Maryland, they call them state's attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the chief prosecutors and the like. It is so important to pay attention to the state's attorneys, your district attorneys, wherever you live, Commonwealth's attorneys, if you're in Virginia, for example, but particularly the judges, because, the judges that you vote for this time, down the road, you could see those judges again being tapped for federal appointments.
That's right.
They're not just going to be county, judges or circuit court judges, if they are either good enough or politically savvy enough, if their names get out there, if there's a ruling that gets a lot of attention, we could see, Judge Tom Smith or Sarah Smith, who's in the county now, become a federal district court judge, after this coming presidential election. You got to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking about this. If we all remember the Ahmaud Arbery case, right, the actual DA, that the young lady that was the DA then, who ran again unopposed. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about making those kinds of decisions on who to prosecute, who not to prosecute, who to bring charges against and who not, this makes a major difference in the judicial system and really criminal justice system in general across this country. And as we think about the disparate experiences, particularly of black communities, we know that whoever is sitting behind the bench has an extensive amount of power. And when you talked about federal appointments, I know right at this point there's been over 128 federal appointments, and not one of them has been a black person.
Yeah.
And so as you think about these numbers, as you think about the kind of engagement that has been, and you're seeing now a concerted effort to start bringing to the table African-American judges across this country. But this, again, this is an issue that we must pay attention to. And, you know, the challenge that we do have is that many everyday voters are just not aware about the lifetime appointments of judges. Mm-hmm. So you may hear about the Supreme Court because it's kind of out there, it's kind of, you know, public, but these federal appointments are major, where people are on the bench for life. And so you are, again, living with policies and the position of those judges for life. And this idea that we can rely on the law being balanced and fair, we just know that it has not been that story for many of us who are representing the black community or other communities of color.
And we go ahead, Lewis, please.
No, she's absolutely right. We also don't make the connection to how these persons get put into the pipeline. And so elections have consequences. And so these appointments are made from, if we're talking about appellate courts and district courts, by the person who sits in the White House just down the street from me. And so to your listeners, who sometimes, you know, everybody has a one or two issue that they care most about, but we're a republic. And unless you're going to live on an island unto yourself, you're going to be impacted by decisions your neighbors make, and things you don't care about will impact your life. So vote about that issue you care passionately about. But I would encourage you to think about all the other ways that your life will be impacted by taxes, by zoning laws, by whether or not your streets are cleaned up, as was mentioned earlier by one caller, as to how your schools are funded by local property taxes. All of these decisions that may not be that one key issue that you care most about still impact your life at the end of the day. So review all of these things before you go into the voting booth or mail your ballot in from the home, and consider all these things that might impact your life or your children, your grandchildren, who may live across the country from you, particularly if it's a national election.
You know, Lewis, one of the things that struck me today, and it's perfect, you know, to have you here, for example. I was watching television and a reporter interviewed a black man who looked like he could be an AARP constituent. Okay.
I'm going to ask, what does that look like?
Yeah, he looked like he was over 50. Okay. But the thing that really struck me, and this goes back to what we were just discussing, he was asked by the reporter about his past voting history. He had none. And he said this was the first time that he was voting. And one of the things that people often forget about, mm-hmm, is the fact that if you don't vote, you cannot or will not be called to serve on a jury, because that is how you are identified as a juror or potentially a grand juror in the city or county that you live in, or a federal grand juror or a federal juror. And in this day and time, when we're talking about issues that are impacting African Americans, you know, I can only imagine, and I don't know that guy from Adam, but certainly if you hear this guy, if he said at some point in conversations with his friends that he doesn't like the way that things were going with the, you know, the criminal justice system or what have you, but if this is the first time that you were voting, then the court system, they don't know who you are to send you into a jury pool. Mm-hmm. And I think if nothing else, you know, that is so important for, you know, for all ages, but, you know, for age diversity, Lewis, it's really important that we, you know, we get everybody involved.
Absolutely. I don't know. Thank you for that anecdote. I don't know that man or his walk.
Right.
But I do know, as a black man living in America, I can probably tune in to how he arrived at that place. It would be perfectly understandable why a good number of people who have looked to the state to come to their aid when they were oppressed, and not get that assistance when they were being oppressed, to want to turn their back to that system because that system doesn't appear to hear their appeals.
But when that happens, that system has you exactly where they want you. That system wants you to disconnect. That system wants you to stay in the bleachers. The system wants you to not vote. It wants you to not pay attention to the issues. And so I would encourage, we did a segment a couple of weeks ago devoted to African-American men, black men, trying to get them to get out and vote. That's a population that black women outvote black men historically. And again, I can understand how a black man might feel that way. But I have voted since I could vote. I grew up in Chicago. I'll share this anecdote real quick because I worked for Harold Washington. I was the first black mayor to see the Chicago. And during Harold's first campaign, there was a button, not sanctioned by the campaign, mind you, but that Harold got tickled by when he saw it on the coat lapel of a young black man on the west side of Chicago. That button said, if you don't vote, I can't say it on the air here, but it said some version of don't fuss. It was a little bit more poignant than that. If you don't vote, don't fuss. And Harold fell in love with that and laughed out loud on live TV. But really, you got to get out onto that playing field and participate. And I would add, voting is the most powerful, peaceful form of protest. It is a powerful, peaceful form of protest. Protest by voting.
Well said. And I'm going to have Siobhan have the last word. You've got about 30 seconds or so, Siobhan.
Absolutely. Listen, as your listeners are hearing us tonight, voting is absolutely a part of our civic duty. We at Delta for Women in Action are committed to ensuring that you have clarity on those candidates that align with principles that we believe the black community can benefit from. I will say this, there are hundreds of thousands of lives that have gone before us that died for this right and are grateful to see their future really relying on the hands of us in those ballot boxes. So whoever you vote for is your choice. That's the joy of the American democracy. But we're calling on you tonight to remember that the choice you make will affect generations to come. And so we are excited to join you tonight. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. And Delta for Women in Action, please check us out. Please support this work and support our friends at AARP. We are here to serve. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
Thank you both so much, Siobhan, Arlene Bradley, and Louis Davis Jr. Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on this Tuesday, 7 days before Election Day, everyone. It's October 27th right now. Like I said, voting is November 3rd, and we're going to take you all the way through between now and next Tuesday. That is the Daily Drum. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. And don't forget, HUR at Home coming up in 15 minutes on all of our social media platforms. Good night.